everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food, and it's the week of Thanksgiving. Countdown, just a couple of days to Thanksgiving, which is always an interesting holiday, especially for vegans and vegetarians. I'm looking forward to it, and we'll talk a little bit more about Thanksgiving later on in the program. First, I wanted to talk about the Work It Women's Podcast Festival that I attended last week. It was amazing. The first amazing thing about it was that I didn't know it existed until a friend of mine and a colleague invited me to go. The other thing that was amazing to me is being a podcaster myself for almost 10 years, I had no idea what was going on in the podcast world around me. From the inside looking out, I just saw my own little world. And then from the outside looking in, once I was at the podcast festival, there were hundreds of people from all over the world talking about their different projects. And it was just so inspiring and amazing. And I was really proud to be a part of it. We learned how podcasting had developed and changed over the years. There were people that presented data on the growth of the industry and the numbers of women who participate either as listeners or podcasters. In the beginning, there were more podcast hosts that were men, and now women are increasing, and it's almost even right now, and it looks like women will actually take over as the majority of podcast hosters. And I kept thinking, wow, I'm a woman, I've been podcasting, and I'm a part of this. I didn't even know I had this tribe. The fantastic thing about a podcast, especially in 2018, is that anyone can do it. Now, I'm fortunate because I'm part of the Progressive Radio Network. And just for a moment, I want to express my thanks for everyone at the Progressive Radio Network for making all of these programs possible. It used to be really challenging to do your own podcast. I know I tried about 7 or 8 years ago. There was some software that I had to get. Live streaming was not as simple as it is today. Now there's equipment that people can buy. There are applications you can use online that make it really, really easy to do audio or video live streaming. And what's wonderful about it is it's relatively democratic. Anyone can have a voice. Anyone can set up a studio in their closet anywhere and broadcast something that they want to talk about. And with the billions of people that are on the planet, it's possible to get a following for your niche concept. I think that's fantastic. I think because I'm so passionate about the subject of food, I don't see it as a niche or a niche, however you want to pronounce it. I don't see it as a specialized topic because I believe food is related to everything. We cannot live without eating food, right? I don't think it's something that is a hobby or something that we do for fun. I'm doing what I'm doing because I think the world for humanity is going to end unless we get our shit together on what we eat and how our food is prepared and how it's grown and how we treat the workers and how we get the food to everyone so that everyone can eat nutritiously. This is a big topic. Unfortunately, not everybody knows that. And so to get the information to everyone to know that they need to be more informed is a challenge. And I'm really grateful that we now have podcasting so that people can get important information out. One of the reasons I was interested in going is exactly that, to learn how to increase my audience. But I learned a lot more there, and I learned things that I didn't know I needed to know. And that's the best part. Again, it was very inspiring. Now, a few things that I was very pleased about. Not only was it woman-centered, this was only for women or people who identified as women, but there were many vegans at this conference. And they weren't necessarily talking about veganism. They all had lives and they all had their own special interests, but they happened to choose to eat plants. I know this because in the 2 days of the conference, when I would sit down at a table for lunch, I wasn't the only vegan at the table. They also offered vegan options. They had brought a food truck each day to the location where the conference was being held, and we all had to go outside, line up for the food truck. And the food truck provided a number of different options, and one was always vegan. The first day, we were all offered a rice bowl, and it was fun. Okay, it was white rice. I'll let that pass. And it had a lot of spicy stuff on it, and I was surprised, because when you're catering to a big group of people, not everyone likes spicy. But it had kimchi, it had black beans on it, it had some fermented vegetables, well, that's kimchi, and some other fermented vegetables like carrots and radishes and lettuce. It was a very satisfying dish, and I was thrilled that they had it. They also served coffee and tea, and soy milk was an option. So all on that, they get A+. The second day, another food truck came up to serve a Mediterranean bowl, and that was really disappointing. It was like a morning snack. It was a few pieces of pale lettuce and two falafel balls. It was very disappointing. But other than that, the conference was really fantastic. Most of the speakers, however, were representing large companies with big budgets that could afford to pay their journalists to do all kinds of interesting projects. So some of the projects we heard about actually took 7, 8, 10 months, over a year to do the research before they presented a story. And many of us podcasters out there just can't do that. I could think of lots of things I would like to do a story about that take months, maybe even years of research. That's challenging. But what was also inspiring was they talked about the organizations one could apply to get a grant to support an idea that you have. If you want to do some investigative reporting or some research on something, there's actually funding out there that can help you. All in all, it was a great experience, and I hope you will be able to benefit too from what I learned, because I hope to include some of the things that I learned over time into this podcast. Some of it's going to take some time, and some of it may be just by osmosis, or something will happen right away. Next topic, which is very related to food. I had a colonoscopy just a few days ago. I want to talk about that. Do people talk about colonoscopies very often? The funny thing is, after I had been through it, my partner Gary DeMattei posted a story on Facebook about it, and everybody has something to say about colonoscopies, but I don't hear people talking about it very much. So let's have a moment and air out our issues and concerns and inspirations with colonoscopies. Number one, why did I get one? So you probably know that, at least in the United States, maybe in other countries as well, regular screening beginning at age 50 is recommended by the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, USPSTF. They say it's the key to preventing colorectal cancer, and they recommend that adults from age 50 to 75 be screened with a colonoscopy. They also recommend that those older than 75 ask their doctor if they should be screened. There's a lot more risk involved as we age with using anesthesia. So my general practitioner for a while now has been saying, Karen, you need to have a colonoscopy. You haven't had one in 11 years. And I really didn't want to have one. There are risks involved with colonoscopies, and the statistics are kind of scary. 1 in 1,000 have some sort of problem when they go through a colonoscopy. And there can be tearing. There can be problems where the doctor needs to do some snipping and resecting, and it can be problematic. Okay, so I got over that because I did have a problem. I have hemorrhoids. How many of you have hemorrhoids? The good thing is, I really don't have any symptoms like pain or itching or discomfort. That's good. But how do I know they're there? I know because occasionally I get a splash of bright red blood when I move my bowels. And this was concerning. So I wanted to make sure that I didn't have any other issues. And that's why I went for a colonoscopy. Now, the fun part, as you may know, with colonoscopy is the colonoscopy prep. And I want to talk a little bit about that. Are you thinking about doing a detox? This is one awful way to do one. The product that I used is something called Go Lightly. Interesting how they come up with these fun names, Go Lightly. What's in it is polyethylene glycol. You know what that stuff is, right? That's antifreeze. Antifreeze for your automobile. Okay, propylene glycol is also used as a laxative, which is why you find it in the Go Lightly solution, along with sodium sulfate, sodium bicarbonate, sodium chloride, potassium chloride. And you can get it with a lemon or pineapple flavor packet. This is a salt solution, and you know how much I love salt. I can't stand salt. And this is super, super extra salty salt that you drink a gallon of over a period of about 4 hours. So the plan is you drink half of it over 2 hours, every 15 minutes, about 8 ounces. And then about 6 hours before your procedure, you finish up the other half a gallon. The day you start this prep, you're not allowed to consume any fiber, and the recommended foods that you are given to eat are just a disaster. Milk, white flour, toast, things that have no fiber. Some of them come from animals because plant foods are loaded with fiber. So it's counterintuitive that you eat the foods that are cancer-causing or unhealthy before you take a test to see if you have cancer. That's our medical system. So I was thinking, what can I eat? And I decided on eating silken tofu drizzled with olive oil. Both are fiberless foods. Silken tofu has a teeny little bit of fiber in it. And I ate an entire package. It wasn't delicious. It wasn't terrible. I felt like I was getting a little nutrition for the day. And then I started the drink. Some people may find this disgusting. I don't know. I was fascinated by the entire process, especially watching the process coming out from the other end. The goal was to have a clean, fiberless colon without any fiber in it from your food, because all of that stuff gets in the way when the doctor wants to look and see what the lining looks like. The goal is to have a clear yellow liquid ending up in your toilet bowl. And I was worried for a while because when I finished the first half gallon, it was still pretty murky. It was full of stuff. What concerned me was that I saw all kinds of solid things like corn kernels, bean skins, all the things from my dinner the night before. And I thought to myself, Karen, you are not chewing carefully enough because some of your food is ending up perfectly shaped on the other end. So that was my first commitment to really chew better. And I tell everybody on this program all the time that we need to chew. It's so important. It's so important for digestion. And, you know, maybe you can visualize yourself how well you're doing by seeing what comes out the other end. Corn. Everybody's been telling me corn is a particularly difficult one. And maybe that's why many people have corn allergies, because it's so difficult to digest. But we just need to really make an effort to chew, 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 chew. I had to get up at 4 a.m, which was fun, to finish the rest of the solution because my procedure was at 10. And so I wasn't going to get much sleep that day. Fortunately, everything worked out all right. Everything came out all right. And I achieved the goal of the clear yellow liquid. The colonoscopy was fine. I was a little concerned talking to my nurse, who was fantastic. My whole team was fantastic. It was an all-woman team. I'm really into all-women medical teams these days. But she didn't seem to know much about nutrition. And this makes my mind explode sometimes, because there's so much research out there today about how we can reduce the risk of cancer, and colon cancer in particular, and it has to do with food. A high-fiber plant diet is essential for a healthy colon. And shouldn't our medical teams know that? She was telling me how much she loves steak. I couldn't help myself. Here I was getting ready for the prep. I was undressing and putting on that blue hospital gown that's open in the back. All that fun stuff. And I was reaching into my bag to get one of my Responsible Eating and Living cards, my nonprofit at responsibleeatingandliving.com, and telling the nurse, I hope you check this out sometime because you might learn about how easy it is to eat healthy, delicious food that's good for your colon. After the procedure was over, I woke up and the nurse, a different nurse, actually a male nurse, he couldn't get over how quickly I got up. He said, everybody else is still sleeping. And I was so alert. I wanted to just get up and go. I was so full of energy. And then they did let me go. Gary was with me, and he had, in solidarity, decided to fast with me. So we were both equally starving. We had brought a bunch of apples with us, and Gary remarked on how this was the most delicious apple he had ever eaten. And if you've ever done a fast, particularly a fast with no food and just water, your taste buds become very sensitive, and you can taste the most subtle, delicious flavors in the seemingly most bland foods after you break your fast. I remember after a 3-week water-only fast, the first food I was given was steamed zucchini, and it was amazing, delicately sweet and lovely and flavorful. But apples weren't enough, and we ran up to one of our favorite restaurants, Candle Cafe West, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and we had a very lovely, relaxed lunch celebrating my colonoscopy. I believe all in all that a colonoscopy, perhaps once every 10 years, is a good thing to do. I know I mentioned the risks, and there are always risks, but it's good to get a baseline to see how things look inside when you're 50. Maybe get another one at 60, maybe another one at 70. I don't know that we need to do more than that. And of course, if something is found that doesn't look exactly right, perhaps you might do them more often. I'm not one who likes to do tests that come with a lot of risks. For example, I've never had a mammogram, and the thoughts behind that particular test are very mixed. The research is very mixed. I know some people swear by them and feel like they've saved their lives. I'm not going there. The best advice is this. Follow your gut. We're talking about colons. Colons are a part of the gut. Follow your gut. You have a lot of intelligence in there, and you need to do what feels right for you. Now back to those hemorrhoids. I've discovered a few things. Since I've been writing a daily blog, What Vegans Eat, and I've been logging in what I eat every day, I'm very aware of the connections between how I feel and what I put in my body. I began keeping track of the few times I would see blood in the bowl after moving my bowels. And I noticed a few things. It will happen after eating at certain restaurants. It will happen if I consume a lot of refined wheat. And sometimes it happens if I eat really, really spicy food. So now I'm on a mission to really narrow it down so that it doesn't ever happen. And that's the challenge. I've been doing pretty well, but fascinating about going to certain restaurants, I'm not sure what the ingredients are that would trigger the problem. I think it might have to do with wheat, perhaps, or perhaps the glyphosate residues that are in conventional wheat products. I still have some studying to do. We are all little guinea pigs when it comes to food intake. And I'm sorry to use the word guinea pigs, but unfortunately, some rodents like guinea pigs and mice are the ones that are used in much of the scientific research today, testing on what will work for humans and what won't. But we are all test specimens because our food is so industrialized today. And there's so much about it that we just don't know and how it affects our own health and our gut. Which is why if you have any kind of gut problems or any kind of physical problems and you're trying to figure out what it is and the medical community isn't giving you the results that you want, logging what you do, journaling what you do in terms of your food intake and your activity and your symptoms can really help. It can really help you. We are all individuals. We are all very complex individuals. And no one has the same gut microbiome. We're all so unique that you can't go to a doctor today and say, I've got this, and expect to get a result that will cure or resolve your problem. Only you can do that. Sure, you can go to these people and get advice, you can get tests, you can get help. But really, isn't your life really up to you? I think so. I'm ready to move past colonoscopies and hemorrhoids and move to the next thing I want to talk about, which is the cashew nut. I like to say that every food has its own story. And I just started reading about cashews. And just like many other foods, there's a dark side to the cashew. I want to talk about that a little bit. Maybe you've heard about it. The cashew is an important food, especially for vegans these days, because cashews are a great substitute for dairy. You can easily blend up cashews in water and make cashew cream, cashew milk. And from cashew cream or cashew milk, depending on how thin you make it, you can make cashew cheese. Cashews are wonderful to make thick, creamy sauces, and they're nutritious, and they have anti-cancer fighting properties. There's a lot of wonderful things about cashews. Some people who have tree nut allergies cannot eat a cashew, but many of us can and can enjoy them. I remember discovering the cashew fruit on one of my trips to Costa Rica, and I was really ignorant about it because the cashew fruit, it looks like a pomegranate in a way. There's the big colorful piece of fruit, and on top where the stem would be is where the cashew nut resides, but it's packaged in a covering that is very toxic, very caustic. Now, I didn't know this. And the first time I saw a cashew fruit and I opened up the area where the nut would be, I put my tongue to it and, oh, I got this stinging, numbing feeling. I knew something wasn't right and I quickly asked about it and learned, no, you must not consume that. That's poison. I never thought much more about it other than I knew what not to eat when I was holding a cashew fruit. I didn't care much for the fruit itself, and I've since learned that there are some businesses making juice from the cashew fruit, trying to utilize the entire fruit, not just for the cashew nut, but using the fruit itself. And all of that is well and good. But what I learned is that the working conditions for getting the nut out of the cashew shell is very tricky. And there are countries like in Vietnam or India where many, many people do this, and it's a very difficult job. And if you don't cover your hands and use gloves, for example, you'll have a lot of excruciating pain. And the pain can go into the hands and get into the rest of your body and cause some serious issues. In addition, when the cashews are roasted to get the caustic chemicals out, they come off into the air. And if you're in one of these low-tech facilities, they will give the workers breathing problems. They have tight lungs and they have chronic coughing. All of this for cashews. It just breaks my heart. This wonderful food that I love so much may be connected to pain and suffering of other people. Oh, we need to be mindful about everything, don't we? And I've read that there are some companies that do this work of removing the cashew from its shell. And they make the workers pay for gloves if they want to have them. And many of these workers make next to nothing. They cannot afford the gloves. And so they get the poison. Now, what's in the cashew shell? A number of different ingredients. There's something called urushiol. It's a caustic, toxic oil. It's also found in poison oak, poison ivy, poison sumac. Anacardic acid is an acid form of this urushiol, and it causes an allergic skin reaction. And then there's another chemical similar to the urushiol called cardol. And these are the caustic ingredients found in cashew shells. There is some good news. There are some cashew companies that are ethical and fair. These are the fair trade companies that make sure the conditions for the workers are fair, that they pay well. And as a result, their products are more expensive. Equal Exchange, Just Cashews, King Agro Processors, Limberona, Liberation Nuts, Subrea, Tolero Global, Tradecraft. I haven't heard of all of these companies, but these were the ones that were listed in one article I read that were ethical and fair. Now, I always buy organic cashews, but I have to dig a little deeper and make sure that not only are they organic and free of toxic residues from the soil, from pesticides and herbicides, but I have to verify that the workers are treated well as well. And this is the challenge when we live in a global society and we get products from far away and we can't even go to the factory unless we travel there and see how workers are treated. Okay, clearly that subject brought me down a little bit. And now we're going to move to happier subjects, okay? Now to the second part of the show, where I want to talk a little bit about theater and Thanksgiving. And of course, it's all about food. It's all about food. But to do that, I'm going to bring on a special guest. I want to say I asked my listeners, all of you out there last week, if you could send me your feedback about this program, what you liked, who some of your favorite guests were, if you liked my solo shows or preferred my interviews with guests. I got some wonderful feedback, but I'll be honest with you, I didn't get enough. So I'm going to put it out there again. If you listen to this program, if it's your first time or if it's your 100th time or your 5th time, how many times? Let me know what you think of it. And you can send me an email at info@realmeals.org. Okay, you got that? So one of the things that I learned from the feedback that I got from some of you was that everyone loves my partner, Gary DeMattei, as a guest on this show. I love him, and I'm glad you love him too. It's always a lot of fun when he's on the show. Not only do we talk about interesting educational information, he always makes it lively, fun, and funny.
Oh, the pressure's on now. Hey, thanks everybody for all the kind words about me being a guest on Karen's show.
Okay, first of all, Gary, you talk very loudly. Okay, so just bring it down a notch.
That's right. It's okay, all that good. Actor training. I'm an actor. I've learned how to project.
Okay, very good. So I'm now going to bring on my guest, which is Gary DiMattei. He's the co-founder of Responsible Eating and Living, the nonprofit we founded together back in 2011.
Yay!
Yay! And he's my life partner and my fun partner. And we cook
a lot. Your colonoscopy buddy.
My colonoscopy partner. As I mentioned before, I told them that you
fasted with me. Did you tell them about your colonoscopy?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The fasting was in solidarity. That's a no-brainer. I mean, can you imagine someone sitting there eating in front of you while you're going? I'm sure, you know,
I've seen it happen.
Yeah, it's not very nice. People at least go take it in the other room.
If you're with someone who can't eat for any reason, having a colonoscopy or having surgery, and you need to eat and you're there to support them, it's best if you move your butt.
Pun intended.
And leave the room and do your eating.
Yeah, go to a restaurant for crying out loud. For George's sake. I learned all about George. You know how people say, by George?
Yes. Tell us about that, Gary.
Yeah. Well, it's just a substitute for God.
Let's talk about where we learned that. So this week, we went to see a show called The Resistible Rise of Arturo Uy. It was at the Classic Stage. Is that considered Broadway or is that off-Broadway?
That's off-Broadway. An off-Broadway contract. You know, the things that, just in case your listeners are wondering, the things that distinguish what Broadway and what off-Broadway is, in addition to the obvious, the district or the street that a lot of these theaters are located, but there are off-Broadway theaters in the Broadway district, I just want to add that, is a contract. Actors Equity has a series of contracts, and if you are in a certain price bracket, you are given a production contract, which is what Broadway's all about. The actors working in this production were members of Actors Equity Association, and they were working with an off-Broadway contract.
That meant that they didn't make as much money as if they were in a Broadway theater doing the same play.
Exactly.
But these were top-notch actors.
Top-notch actors.
Many of them who have been on Broadway.
Most all of them, probably.
Yes.
Well, no, not most all of them, but most of the leads. Raul Esparza, George Abood.
We're bringing it up because it had to do with food.
Yeah.
Kind of.
So The Resistible Rise of Arturo Uy is a satire. It's an allegory about the rise of Hitler. And now it's, for some reason, artistic directors are picking it to put in their seasons. It's by Bertolt Brecht. He wrote it... He wasn't living in the United States when he wrote it. He was living in Europe. He was soon to come to the United States, but he wrote to reflect the rise of Adolf Hitler because he's obviously from Germany and was living through all of that and had to leave Germany or wanted to leave, chose to leave Germany why would you want to stay during that? Why do we want to stay during this?
Exactly. Well, we went to see this play. And it's not the kind of thing that people are running to see on Broadway. It's not high kick, great songs that you lead with. It's not mindless entertainment that many tourists this Thanksgiving weekend are going to see.
But go see it.
But go see it.
It's great.
I want to say that I wasn't familiar with what was behind Brecht's inspiration for writing this play. And I wasn't that familiar with who the characters were representing. And all I knew was it had something to do with Hitler's rise to power and the similar storyline to how the president of the United States came to power.
But the reason you're bringing it up on a program about food is they used cauliflower industry. Vegetables, basically.
Yeah, vegetables, but they kept saying cauliflower. So the people
this thug, this gangster, Uy, played by Raul Esparza, wanted to gain control of and to pressure the growers of cauliflower and the people that pressure industries into giving them protection money. So it basically showed you how people rise to power by using gangster tactics. I mean, these guys are gangsters.
Yeah, and it showed how innocent people can be sucked in and align with
these bullies, these gangsters, out of need to survive, just for survival mechanisms.
And Hitler was also often referred to as a gangster, as a thug, as someone who had thugs on his staff that would go rough people, literally rough people up if they didn't pay protection money. And that's basically what happened. And then they would rough people up. Hey, this works about, you know, protection money. Let's rough people up about you better vote for this guy. And if you don't vote for this guy, we're going to come and burn your business down, or burn the Reichstag down, or burn California down. I mean, who knows what is going on behind the scenes? And apparently Brecht did. His satire, his allegory about thugs in power is basically... The backdrop was the cauliflower industry, the produce business, and it was
chilling.
Chilling, but also very entertaining, because Brecht felt that audiences needed to be entertained.
There was one scene in the play that was a court scene, and again, parallels to what goes on in the justice system sometimes, a little too often perhaps, and more often in history, where the innocent person was sent to jail.
Hello. Does that happen?
It happens all the time, unfortunately, because our prison system is the new slave system.
Right. But anyway,
but that's another story.
We're getting off on the subject of cauliflower.
So if you're looking for some great theater to see this weekend,
and you live in New York or the tri-state area, or even if you don't live in the tri-state area, fly out and see The Resistible Rise of Arturo Uy.
And you can get discount tickets. It's off Broadway, so the price is less than Broadway. Read about it before you go.
Yeah.
But
directed by John Doyle, now the artistic director of Classic Stage Company downtown on 13th Street.
Wow.
A wonderful space.
Yes. Okay.
Anyway, so cauliflower. On the subject of cauliflower, a lot of people know that we have lots of recipes up on our website. And there's a great recipe for cauliflower, mashed cauliflower. If you don't want to have mashed potatoes this Thanksgiving, you can do our mashed cauliflower recipe, which is basically... It's a remarkable recipe, and it uses roast garlic with steamed cauliflower. You mash it together, you put some nutritional yeast, cashew cream, and you bake it in the oven, and it's delicious. And it's a great substitute if you don't want white potatoes. But
cauliflower has really grown in its...
No pun intended.
In its notoriety.
Right.
It used, as you mentioned, kind of as a substitute for potatoes for people who are concerned about getting too much starch or eating a high glycemic food. And it's used as a rice or as a pizza dough. It's used for so many things.
Steak.
Cauliflower steak.
Great recipe in a book called Great Chefs Cook Vegan by our friend Linda Long. Hi, Linda, if you're listening. There's a great recipe by one of the chefs in the book for cauliflower steak, where you slice a cauliflower in about a 2-inch thickness, and you prep it the same way you would prep a steak, and you grill it, and it's fantastic.
And then you slather it with barbecue sauce, and it's better than buffalo wings.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's...
And we've got this great cauliflower recipe that we like, where we're putting tahini with it, and sun-dried tomatoes, and olives, and a little lemon juice.
And as long as you put a little chipotle powder in the tahini.
Gotta put the chipotle powder in the tahini. There's so much you can do with cauliflower other than the obvious, which is just to steam it or to boil it down until it's really mushy. I mean, you don't need to cook it to death. You don't need to do that.
Now, we love cauliflower, but cauliflower is not on our Thanksgiving menu this year.
No. White potatoes, Yukon Gold.
We're using gold potatoes.
Well, actually, we're catering Thanksgiving this year. We're packing the meal up here at the Responsible Eating and Living Kitchen, and we're bringing it out to Long Island to a lovely person who's going to be there alone in her home, and we're going to invade it and serve her dinner, and that's your mommy.
That's my mom. So,
and you're mourning the year anniversary of your father's passing, which...
It's on November 22nd, the same day as Thanksgiving. So it'll be a difficult time, but I also want to make it a celebration.
Right.
We just found out my cousin and her daughter are coming up from Florida. It's kind of a surprise last-minute visit.
Yes.
That's going to make it very special, especially since her daughter is vegetarian.
Yes, and that'll be fun to to see them. They're always a lot of fun, and hopefully they'll have a good time and maybe hang out in New York for a while and see some shows. And maybe they'll go see The Resistible Rise of Arturo Uy, although I doubt it.
Okay, what are we making? We're making food that we want to make, which is really important. You have to want to make the food that you want to make. Otherwise, there's no fun in it. And we're making food that is packable so that we can put it in the car and bring it with us.
Right. So if those of you who know about our nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, know about our Real Thanksgiving Celebration Feast, which is now up on the slider page of our website. You just click on that and you'll see a picture of Karen standing in front of behind the feast with her arms open. And one of the items is a red curry squash with polenta stuffing. We're going to make that, only we're not using a red curry squash this year. We're using more of a blue squash, which is called...
It's a blue winter squash.
A blue winter squash. And have you ever noticed when you see a poor little turkey that's been killed, it's sort of blue.
It looks blue.
I'm interested to see how this is going to turn out. It's probably going to have brown in the same way. But anyway, it's a fabulous recipe. You should make it too for your family.
What I love about these squashes, like the blue winter squash or the red curry squash, is they're large.
Right.
And they're beautiful to present. So right. You cut off the top of it and scoop out the inside, and you can stuff it, which is also fun.
And bake it in the oven just like you would bake your little feathered friends. It takes a few hours, depending on the weight. It behaves exactly like a stuffed friend.
And you can slice it or carve it to cut the nice slice.
A lot
pieces.
Of people say, well, I could never not have a turkey at Thanksgiving because I need that main event, that thing that we present to the family. And this
is a main event.
And plus, it's more traditional. It's what you would call keeping in line with the Three Sisters theme of Thanksgiving.
I mentioned the Three Sisters last week, and I want to give a little more information in detail about the Three Sisters. I just love the whole concept, the history, the story behind the Three Sisters. The Three Sisters, there are three main agricultural crops of various Native American groups in North America. And it consists of squash, winter squash, like this blue winter squash we'll be using, corn, and beans that grow in a climbing fashion. And what they did, the Native Americans, and this is, I want to say, agricultural technology that was developed over 5,000 or 6,000 years. That's how fantastic it is. And who does it anymore? Unfortunately, not enough, but I'd like to bring it back. So they plant corn, and the corn grows to about 6 inches, and then they'll plant the beans and the squash around the corn. And as the corn grows and the beans grow, the beans have a pole to grow around. So you don't have to use a pole for the beans to grow. And the squash spreads around and protects the soil. And the squash leaves offer some nitrogen for the soil. And it's just a beautiful cooperative arrangement.
Right. That's fascinating that the corn becomes the bean pole.
I'm sorry. I said the squash leaves provide the nitrogen. It's the beans that provide the nitrogen to the soil, and the squash blocks the sunlight and prevents the weeds from growing. And there are the little prickly things
on the vines of the squash.
On the vines that prevent more pests.
Right.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
It is.
What a concept.
And then you get corn, beans, and squash. And typically they're different colors, yellow corn, orange squash, and then whatever bean you use, pink or black or
green. It could be string beans,
right? It could be, absolutely.
Because string beans grow around a bean pole, so that makes sense.
Yes, and you combine them together and they make beautiful dishes. I love featuring a Three Sisters dish at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and it's a Three Sisters, we're talking about theater as well, and Three Sisters is a great play by Anton Chekhov.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Three Sisters? Oh. We don't have enough time, but I will tell you, most of you probably know about Chekhov's Three Sisters, but it's a great play. And again, the allegory here is they're using, with the beans, the squash, and the corn, they're using the three sisters because they are friends. They are compatible, yet they are different.
Oh, beautiful.
Right?
So everything I love about it.
Yeah, it's great. Beautiful. I mean, you know, they're individuals.
But they need each other.
And that's Chekhov's play. They're individuals, but they need each other. Mm-hmm. And like all of us. Right. And he just whittles it down to three sisters in a family that is going through some changes.
Okay, we have the squash dish that you're going to be making. And we'll have another main event just because we tend to overdo things when it comes
always,
to food.
Always. Plus, we like to eat.
And we haven't had this in a long time, and I really can't wait. But this is another one of Gary's genius recipes, and it's a butternut squash lasagna with Brussels sprouts.
Right. Oh, and it's all gluten-free, and it's really wonderful.
It's rich and satisfying, beautiful colors.
Yeah, so everybody knows how to make lasagna. It's a layering noodle thing. And, you know, the thing that you're layering this noodle with is sautéed Brussels sprouts. And you sauté them with a little onions or shallots and garlic. And then you you make a puree of butternut squash. It's, you know, because normally lasagna would be a red sauce and a ricotta. Of course, our ricotta would be almond ricotta, and then you layer that with some cheese and you bake it. Well, this is layered with Brussels sprouts, a puree of butternut squash, and the smoky flavor is a little tempeh bacon that we chop up. So bacon, tempeh bacon bits, and it's just wonderful. And we use a little cashew cream and we bake it. And it's a great way to get your family to eat Brussels sprouts. I mean, I don't know why I said that. It's basically
Brussels sprouts is another vegetable like cauliflower that's really gained in notoriety. So right. I remember when I was young, Brussels sprouts were gross and disgusting. And I even insulted a friend of mine who brought it to the Thanksgiving table. You brought Brussels sprouts? But now Brussels sprouts are kind of hip.
Yeah, and they're everywhere. But, you know, it's difficult to find them organic.
We had to search high and low.
We finally found them, but I think they were in the trunk of someone's car. Hey, you want organic Brussels sprouts? I got them right here. And I thought, Arturo Uy, maybe?
Right. Now, my mom, she always likes to have a bowl of mashed turnips for Thanksgiving. It's something her mother made, and she's been making them.
And tell them about your genius idea for the turnips, because mashed turnips alone...
Mashed turnips alone don't make it for me. Number one, when I was young, I always thought they were sweet potatoes, and I'd bite into them, and whoa, that's not sweet potatoes. No. I was always disappointed. But I am going to make a turnip cake this year.
Yes.
Which is a Chinese recipe, often made from radishes or different kinds of root vegetables. And I'm going to make it from a turnip.
And you love the turnip cakes at Buddha Bodai in Manhattan.
So good, yes. So I've never made them before. I'm going to make them, and I'll share with you the recipe when it's done, but I know they're going to be fantastic.
That'll be a great way to get the family to eat turnips, because I've had a bite of that turnip cake at Buddha Bodai.
It was good.
That was really good. Yeah. Can't wait to see how that comes out.
The other thing that we're working on this year is not using any refined sugar.
Right. We're going to sweeten everything with dates.
Dates and date paste.
Or dried apricots or fig butter or apricot butter that we make from dried apricots. And for us, you know, this is going to be challenging, but also sweet enough because my taste buds have changed since I've adopted a plant-based lifestyle. And I no longer think sugar is necessary to sweeten things.
I'm so blown away with your change. It's taken a long time. It's taken a decade.
It has. It's
been a journey.
And little by little, it you know, if you stick with it, and it's going to pay off. So
we're making cranberry sauce without sugar. You're making it. This is on your list to make.
Well, I made it last year. You liked it.
I did. It had apricots in it, right?
Yeah, so I sweetened it with our apricot butter. But instead of making the apricot butter and then sweetening it after the cranberries were cooked, I cooked the dried apricots with the cranberries and added the essence of the orange rind and did it that way. So I'll put a recipe together this year and send it out to everybody so you have it by
Next year.
The next holiday you have. No, there's a bunch of holidays.
Oh, well.
There's probably 21.
Sure, for the winter holidays.
Holidays people are celebrating in the winter. Woo,
it's party time.
Yeah.
I'm making the desserts.
Yes.
And I have a traditional recipe last few years that I really love, and it's not my recipe. When I interviewed Gina Hampshaw a bunch of years ago, she had a raw pecan pie recipe that
so good
piqued my interest, and I've made it, and I love it, and I'm making it again. And it's made with dates and pecans and walnuts, a little coconut oil, and it's raw and so good and naturally sweet. It doesn't need any extra sweetener. I'm going to be making an apple pie, kind of the French style apple pie, not with a double crust. And I'm not going to use any sugar. If the apples are organic and flavorful, they're sweet enough.
Right. That's true. It's really true. I mean, think about having just a baked apple.
Fantastic.
If it's a great apple.
It's good.
It's really good. Really sweet.
And then the next thing I'm going to be making, I'm real excited about this. Again, I haven't made it yet. I've made it in my mind. And that's a purple sweet potato pie with a marshmallow fluff topping.
Right.
So the marshmallow fluff topping is going to be made from aquafaba.
Soaking the beans right now.
And dates. And that's going to be challenging because aquafaba in general, everything I've done before and have read, has required refined sugar to really get those stiff peaks for meringue. But I think for a fluff, the dates should be okay. Stay tuned.
Yeah. You'll probably have to experiment with that a little bit.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
But purple sweet potatoes, I'm so in love with them. They're so good for you. The color is so fantastic, and I can't wait to see what they look like in a pie.
Right. We went shopping for those last night at Whole Foods in Manhattan and found them. They're tough to find.
They are. And they were organic.
What's the name
Stokes.
Of
them?
Stokes.
Stokes. I can't say enough good about them. Gary, I can't believe it, but we only have a few more minutes left. And I wanted to mention that I'm singing in a concert in San Jose on December 7th. It's a fundraiser for Playful. I said purple and now I'm saying Playful.
For Purple People Productions.
No. Playful People Productions.
Say it again.
Playful People Productions. They're at playfulpeopleproductions.net. And they are a nonprofit theater company that Gary and I work with.
And run by our friends Barb Galeotto and Katie Darcy.
And so we're doing a fundraiser for them. I'm singing, and there'll be a number of auction items at the event. And one of them is going to be the Swing Gourmets.
Yes, it's a live auction item. It's one of just a few live auction items. The idea is dinner for eight, plus our gracious hosts who are hosting a beautiful home in the Rose Garden for us. And so anyway, the person's bidding on it will get an evening. We're going to bring the Swing Gourmets back, and they'll get an evening with the Swing Gourmets. We'll cook them dinner, a plant-based dinner for them and their friends to come over, and then we'll have a little singing afterwards. We'll do a couple of our Swing Gourmets numbers, and we're excited to get, to introduce people who maybe wouldn't normally cook themselves a plant-based meal, how easy and wonderful and simple it is to go plant-based.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So we've come to the end of the show. Gary, thanks for joining me. You always make things go fast.
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 Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
And remember, have a delicious week.
Thank you.